Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And ground cloth stabbers, too, you know, whatever. Yeah. Whatever you feel like on the given day. It's Wednesday. We're recording Wednesday. Normally, we have these recorded ahead of time. But things have just not worked out. First, it was Jennifer's turn, and then her schedule didn't work, and then Bess did, and then my schedule didn't work, so Wednesday. It's just the way it is. Just the way it is. We're getting it in, though. We get credit for getting it in. So
That's right.
So no show tonight because we're doing this. Sunday's show is very different. Ana Luisa Catalano is our guest. And she started embroidery, another pandemic thing. She started embroidery in 2020, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
But she is a biologist and bird. You want to say bird watcher, but she's not a bird watcher. She's way, way more than that. I don't even know what to call her.
It starts with where they listen to the birds and they record them. Yeah. It's more of a science. It's a science.
Yeah. Because I didn't know there's two kinds of songs. There's the song and then there's the call. I didn't know that there was two things.
No.
And then there's dialects. We learned so much because there's dialects for birds like humans.
Right.
You know, who knew?
Right.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. Yeah. It's interesting. So, it was an interesting talk. It was an interesting talk.
So, and she's actually, she recorded with us last week, I think it was. And then she was headed to the Amazon because she spends every year a segment of time in the Amazon recording birds and tracking and counting and all these things. Fascinating lady. And then taught herself to thread paint and embroider. And wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. You know, what she has learned in a couple of years, her work is just amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Because there's the one picture that I'll make sure gets put in the show notes where she shows the same bird the first time she did it and the second time she did it. And in a short couple of year span, holy smoke, she went from rookie to veteran.
Beautiful work.
Yep. So Ana is our guest Sunday. Going to be great. It was just great talking to her. Be sure you get to the EGA website and sign up if you're a member for next year's classes and the seminar. And if you're a member or not a member, the seminar,
Sampler U.
Thank you. Sampler University is open to, it's a two-day weekend event within the seminar, open to members and non-members. Two great sampler products or packages, projects. I'll come up with the right words after we're done recording this. Then I'll be able to use all the right words. It's going to be very exciting for Marga. And that'll be it. Yeah.
Poor Marga.
So anyway, if you're not a member, this is a chance to participate in the seminar and experience that by doing the Sampler University. So do that, egausa.org. Yeah.
And did you notice that Clara's koi class was full? It filled in an hour.
Get out of here.
No. An hour. And I didn't check because I was like, I wonder what the Phoenix class did. I bet it's full.
Yeah.
I bet it's full.
Yeah.
Because that was a cool piece. I don't remember who was teaching it. I just remember seeing it and thinking, oh, how much would you learn taking that one? But yeah, I think it's worth taking a peek if you're really interested in a class, signing up.
Yep.
Because the classes do fill. They do the more popular ones. And who's going to be there? Kate Barlow from the Royal School of Needlework. And then a few other people that, you know, bigger names that it's hard to, unless you're going to fly over to across the pond.
Right. Yeah. You don't get to see them. Yeah. So, so check that out. And Beth and I are tossing around, maybe having Fiber Talk there to do some shows. So we got to see if we can work that out and figure things out. But basically
that'd be fun.
Basically creating creating work and whatever for ourselves, but we've been banging it around. So we may be there. We'll see. We got to have some conversations. And yesterday I didn't sign up for anything. So now I got to go back because yesterday I got to tell this story. It has nothing to do with cycling or with needlework.
Stitching.
Because it has to do with cycling. There's this young lady, Lael Wilcox, who is world-class ultra-distance cyclist. And she is, well, she finished, this is Wednesday the 11th, a day we remember. Let's not just pass by that. September 11 is not a day that we just blow by lightly here. But she will finish tonight in Chicago setting the world's record for women and maybe for everyone. I can't say for sure, but certainly for women around the world, self-supported around the world, riding a bike, 110 days. Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I can't. Yeah. I just can't even either. Unsupported. And her wife, Rugil Kaladite is her name, and I don't know what country she's from. I forget. I followed these two for a long time. Rue is a photojournalist, very skilled, highly talented photojournalist. She's been following her the entire way and is now a movie will come out of this. Cannot wait to see it. Cannot wait. But so this is completely unsupported and you have to do it on your own. But she posted, Lael posted her route and invited people to ride with her the entire way. And there's been segments where she's ridden alone, but she's had at least somebody with her just about the entire way, and many times large groups of cyclists. And of course, then people all along the road, you know, cheering her, signs, places for, you know, here's some food and water, all kinds of stories. And so she was through, she flew from New Zealand to Alaska, rode all the way down the coast from Alaska into California. Picked up Route 66 and then took that to Chicago. Well, Route 66 goes right through St. Louis. So, and she rode, she came through yesterday on the roads that I ride on all the time, out west of where we live. Right? I mean, like roads I know way too well. Mm-hmm. So I went out to meet her, and this is the first time that I have been, other than TV, anywhere near a world-class athlete. Wow. It was, I just can't, it's so hard to describe because, I filmed her on my GoPro. I got like 20 seconds. She waved. She's, you know, she's the happiest, most positive person on the planet, I guarantee you. But waved, hi, how you doing? As she flew by me, and I put my GoPro in my little bag in the front and turned my bike around and took off after her because I wanted to ride with her. And I sprinted a dead sprint as hard as I could go and caught her. And I think she let me catch her because she thought maybe I could ride with her. But I'm sure when she heard the huffing and puffing when I caught up, she knew darn well there was no way I was staying with her. I got on her wheel and was drafting with her for about 200 yards. I couldn't do it. I mean, and she isn't even working. And she had ridden 230 miles the day before. She is not even working. It's just a cruise in the country for her. I am just completely gassed. And I said to her, oh, lady, I can't do this. And I said, have a good ride. She says, thanks for coming out. And she was just gone.
She's just gone.
Yeah. But it's just, you know.
Right.
And until you're there, you can watch it on TV all you want. You know, but what talent, what so smooth, so effortless, and so incredibly powerful. Just, hills that are 4% and 5% grade that, I mean, I'm used to them now, but I still have to work to get up them. Nah, flat road to her. Nope.
Yeah.
Ran into somebody when you were doing marathons out west, athlete too, same.
Right. You know, they make it look easy. They're just like, you know, just kind of cruising. You can tell by their stride. They're just cruising. And you're like heavy breathing, you know, it's like, no way. But you can tell they've just got a different cadence. There's just something about it. You can tell that they're elite. They are better than us. And they're chosen field, and they've been gifted, and it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch good athletes, you know, at the top of their game. But wow, that's so cool that you were able to.
Yeah. I'll never forget it. You know, I mean, happened, and this is all in the span of maybe 3 minutes total that I was anywhere near her, but I will never forget getting on her wheel, just barely able. And riding there and up here in front of me, right in front of me, like inches away, wheels inches away, is this world-class athlete I'm right with her. And if somebody had an oxygen mask drop from the ceiling, you know, and somebody put it on me, then I'd have probably been okay. But it's just so different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think athletes, whether they perform at that level, it's amazing. It's just amazing to see them. It's amazing.
So what fun. That was an experience. And I mean, I literally had everything I had on Tuesday. I just moved because she was supposed to do it Wednesday, but she got it ahead and she kept going. She wanted to finish up. So it became Tuesday, but I moved everything so I could experience that. It was, I'll never forget it ever.
That's good. Cool. That is neat.
This activity, because we heard from Tanya Berlin just a couple days ago in her newsletter that she's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and which is sad. And you know, say a prayer for Tanya. She deals with that. I was going to say battles. I don't know that you just deal with it. There's drugs. There's more than there was.
Right.
But she's dealing with it. But it was interesting because she talked about a key element was remaining active. And she's doing boxing.
Right.
Which, you know, apparently it's what she described it in there. It's the dopamine that stops flowing in your body, and so if you're active, then that starts to drive it.
I have a friend that moved from where we live in Illinois, and the family moved to Florida because he was diagnosed with Parkinson. And the last time we saw him, we were worried because he was walking from the inside of the church to the car. We were afraid that he was going to fall. It was very sad. I mean, very sharp man, but obviously his body was declining. Well, they moved him to Florida and they got him in some, Muhammad Ali had Parkinson and he started these boxing programs. And they said it made huge difference that all of a sudden his mobility increased. He had better balance, which is, you know, another part of the issue. And enjoying life because he was close to his grandchildren lived there. And so that was the son, not so much the grandkids. That's what he was after. Right.
Yeah.
So just a total change by moving, by doing the movement, by doing the boxing. And I wonder if it's like the, if you're boxing, you've got to do right hand, left hand, you're making your brain work when you do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that has something to do with affecting the Parkinson too, because you've got to think a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just an automatic movement if you're not used to it.
Right. Yeah. It's so interesting because Tanya says she's doing boxing and so you have that story. And then REI, the outdoors online stores, recreational store, they have a podcast, Ideas Worth Living. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Wild Ideas Worth Living. And not too long ago, they had a guest on that podcast, and she had discovered that rock climbing helps people with Parkinson's disease. And now that you describe that, the thinking part, it kind of ties in. And this lady has had good success helping people by getting them rock climbing with Parkinson's, and they start to stabilize and gain mobility. But you pointing out about the thinking, because with rock climbing, That's not automatic either. You got to pay attention. So that's most interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I wondered. You know, I'm sure they're doing studies on it because it's a fascinating field. But you think about it. You know, when we do so many things automatically. You know, mm-hmm. you can walk, and that's pretty automatic. You don't have to think about it. But if you have to do anything where you're moving your body in a slightly different way, it requires you to use your brain a little bit. You know. And I wonder if that makes the difference in the Parkinson's, because Parkinson's runs in my husband's family. So I think one of his cousins has done research on it. PhD, I think he's kind of world renowned. And so one of the things he recommended was coffee, drinking coffee. I've got that covered.
Yeah, you're all set. Yep.
I'm set. But it's a fascinating field of study. I kind of would like to ping him about it and say, hey, what's this with, why is boxing, rock climbing, why are those two things being recommended or noticed that there's improvement in people who have Parkinson?
Right.
That
would be interesting to know. I'm sure if he studied it, he's run across it, because if Tanya got recommended, you know, by doctors to do that, then it's a known thing. Yeah. There was another podcast I listened to, and we'll get to the needlework in a minute, but there was another podcast I listened to, and I can't point where it was at, but it was about a lady who has one of those that has hypersensitive sense of smell. And she noticed a change in the smell of her husband, you know, cause our spouses, we all know. Mm-hmm. And she noticed a change that was almost offensive. And it turned out years later, he got Parkinson's, or he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. She smelled it.
Wow.
He was giving off an odor. And then she got in a room, and don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty close, a room with other people. And she was able to detect who had Parkinson's. They didn't even know it before they knew it. And then they didn't believe her, and then later on, these people all got Parkinson's, all but one, I think, or all were diagnosed. I mean, I don't know if you get it. I think you have it, and it manifests. And so then that set off a whole field of study of odor that people give off when they and the other diseases do too, and that was fascinating. So
yeah, that would be interesting to know, because I think sometimes they use like dogs, because they're so highly sensitive to smell, that they recognize that. And that's why they use it for like people who, like, they can tell if people's blood sugar is dropping, if you're diabetic.
Oh,
like,
really?
Especially with kids who have type 1 diabetes, you know, which is hard when you're first trying to get that under control. The dog can tell.
Wow.
The dog can tell, which is interesting to me. Fascinating.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
So we pray for Tanya, and she's still in business. She points out in her newsletter that doesn't mean I can't ship stuff and design stuff. Tanya Berlin, and she's an excellent source here in the States for gold work supplies. She's in Canada, but she is an excellent resource for that. So if you're looking for gold work supplies, Tanya Berlin is the place to go. We talked to her, I don't know, 3 years ago. I don't know, a long time ago. Terrific lady. And say a prayer. And it's fascinating. Yeah. Sorry that she has it, but it's also fascinating what, you know, the studies and so on and so forth. So, stay active.
I think that's it. I was thinking after reading that, I noticed my kids are all gone, and I'm moving a little less. And I thought, well, why is that? I would think I'd move more because I've got to go run downstairs if I need a jar of tomatoes instead of sending a kid down, you know, or to the garage to get a jar of something. Anyway, and I realized because I'm not cooking as much because it's just my husband and I, it's just Max and I, I'm maybe not gardening as much. I have a smaller garden. I'm getting a little less movement in, and I'm not getting up as much. I'll sit and stitch for like 3 hours, I've noticed, in the evenings. And I thought, this is bad. This is becoming a bad habit. And I still haven't implemented it, but I keep on thinking, I need to set a timer on my watch, on my phone, when I sit down, for it to ping that I get up and move, that I get up and do something for just 2 minutes. I know it doesn't have to be long. Yeah. It just has to be a get up and move and do something. Cause I do exercise. I do move and do, you know, I walk pretty much every day or do something, but I'm sitting more. And yeah. I think that's the new killer, you know, yeah. you know, not moving as much. Right. And it's easy to get into that habit. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. oh, I mean, yeah. why would I want to stop my stitching to get up and walk around for 2 minutes? I'm on a roll. I'm moving forward. I'm making progress.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, you know, because yeah. I know it, not moving, you know, you're more likely to get blood clots, which, you know, strokes, all that stuff. So it's, yeah, it's for our health, and that way we can stitch longer.
Yeah. Well, what do they say? If you're not moving, eventually you can't move. I mean, you have to move, and you have to move with some vigor. You know, you hear people say, "Oh, I've got 5,000 steps in today, of the prescribed 10,000." But those 5,000 steps are just going to the bathroom, going to the kitchen, to the refrigerator. Those don't count. Those aren't steps. Go out and walk.
It's a good beginning spot. I always tell people, you know, because they'll be like, well, how, like someone asked me, I was walking the other day and I ran into someone I knew and she goes, how many steps do you take a day? I said, well, I aim for 15,000 a day. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I need. I mean, I need that much, you know, 10 isn't enough for me. But for people who are just starting, like, or like when I injure myself, I'm like, okay, you gotta have to step back. You gotta take it easy. It's doing just a little bit, getting up and moving, making it deliberate movement, like I said, I remember one time I injured my ankle and I tore a ligament and I was able to put weight on it and I was supposed to be moving, but I couldn't be on it for very long. So I set a timer for 2 minutes and I literally would go out and walk around the car in the garage because it was cold out. I couldn't go outside. It was too icy. Walk around in the garage, come in, do a lap in the house and walk around. Yeah. It's kind of boring, but I did it for 2 minutes. It helped. I know it helped. It made a difference. And that's what I need to do because I will sit and stitch for 3 hours. And I noticed it and I was like, oh, this is bad. I don't have a smart watch that tells me. You know, oh, you've sat for 3 hours. It doesn't. Mine's a dumb watch. It just tells the time.
Yeah. But you have a phone that you can set an alarm on, mm-hmm. make you get up. But that's the, you know, and that's the key thing. Cause when I first started cycling seriously, I could ride. There was a set of blocks like where we lived and then down, we were on Fifth Street and then down to First Street. You know, and so there was a set of city blocks, residential area. I could ride half that distance when I started, and then that's all I had. But it was, all right, I'm going to ride that, and then tomorrow I'm going to come back and ride it again. And then the next day I'm going to see if I can go a little further. And then the next day I'm going to go a little further. I'm not fast, but I'm doing it. And pretty soon I could get all the way around, all right? I can get all the way around. Now can I do it tomorrow? 10 seconds faster and you build up and you build up and you build up. And then, you know, for me over time, for me to go out and ride 65, 70 miles. Yeah. I'm tired, but yeah, no big deal.
Right.
But yeah, it's the consistency, you know, get up mm-hmm. and move but do it every day, do it multiple times a day, but do it. Yeah.
Right. And I think as stitchers, and I just saw something too, I think it was in the Needlepoint Now magazine talking about doing hand exercising, mm-hmm. you know, because we tend to, you know, tension in our hands. And Deb did it with us. Deb DeCrane showed us some, you know, stretching your hands, you know, stretching your fingers, doing the, you know, what is it? This is the church. This is a steeple, you know, thing. Yeah. I can never remember how to do it.
Open the too doors and all the
pieces. And all the pieces. There's the steeple. Yeah. Right. But, you know, we tend to use our hands a lot with our stitching, and I don't stop and stretch while I'm stitching. To even stop and do that makes me, I mean, those health things that we need to do if we want to continue to do our hobby, I think is what's important, you know.
And there's a whole field of study that has proven that you can get yourself in decent shape just stretching every day. Vigorous stretching all parts of your body every day, get stronger. And yoga is really not appreciably different from that.
Right.
I mean, it's more, I appreciate, but it's just making your body move and stretch. And it's important. It really is. Yep. Yeah.
Right.
No, and I've learned with cycling now, I never stretched. I never. Just get on my bike and ride.
Yeah.
I do now. Because the muscles get short, the joints start getting pulled ways they shouldn't get pulled because the opposing muscles are not right.
Yeah, right.
I do
right.
now.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, yep. right. And I have a bad tendency not to. And then I was with my sister at one point, and she goes, we went for a walk, and she goes, okay, it's time to do our stretches. And I'm like, I'm going to stretch. And she goes, No.
Uh-huh. Yep.
She made me stretch. And I felt so much better. I thought, okay, yeah, I can tell. And so I've been much more conscientious about doing my stretches, even stopping in the day. If I've done a lot of standing, like when I'm canning, I stand a lot. You're standing and you're slightly bent over.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, I need to do my stretches. If that's all I can do today,
right.
that's what I'm doing. I'm going to do my stretches.
Yep.
Something's better than nothing.
Yep. Yeah. My current challenge to myself, me and my challenges, but my current challenge is to be able to touch the floor, bend over and touch the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working every single day on that because with cycling, your hamstrings get short. It's just a function of cycling. They get short. And if you don't stretch them out, then your quads get really strong, your hamstrings get short. Then they start pulling your knees the way they ain't supposed to be pulled. And then you start having trouble. So that's what got me stretching, was that my knees were starting to squawk a little bit.
No.
But about 4 months ago, I said, all right, I haven't touched the floor bending over with straight knees. I haven't touched the floor since I was 20. And I'm almost 70. All right, we're going to see. Can I get there?
Yeah.
2 inches. 2 inches away. I'm getting there.
You can, you're getting close. Getting close.
I'm working on it. Yeah. I will get there.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
We'll see. I'll get there. I will touch the floor. I will. There was this thing you sent me, and then I forgot to follow up with you, where I read the whole thing where somebody talked about doing whips in a rotation.
And I can't remember where I looked for it too before we got on, and I was like, but now I can't find it. It disappeared into my emails. But anyway, but it's okay. So this lady, said she went through her house and she found all her whips, you know, the ones you've got tucked in the closet, the ones that are hidden under the bed.
I don't have any.
And
okay, maybe.
Don't make me laugh. Okay. So, and then she took four or six or something, and she said she got them all ready and she worked on them for 10 hours at a time. So one through five, and then she'd rotate them through until they got done through, she finished them. And then she would pull out the next one and add it to the rotation. And she said she got rid of all her UFOs and her whips by, pulling them and working 10 hours at a time. I've heard of that before, and I can't. For some reason, I don't keep track of hours, I think, is one thing. And I tried it, and I couldn't concentrate that long. although I work on projects for long periods of time, I think with that constraint, it makes me feel like I'm, I want to work on something else, or I'm going to find something else to do.
Okay, see, my understanding of that was it was not a 10-hour stretch, but it was – I'm going to work on this exclusively until I have worked on it for 10 hours. So it might be 2 weeks of an hour a day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then she had a chart where she marked it off. And then, so 10 hours, and then you move on to the next one. But the thing that was interesting to me, other than that, was that she also no longer had projects that she hated. Because she talked about, you know, a project she worked on and just got sick of it. Well, mixing in others, and then she got back to that, and it was kind of fresh.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right. And the other thing she did, that which was interesting, because I thought, well, what do you have if you have a deadline? Then she would work, let's say she had a project with a deadline. She'd work on it for those 10 hours, you know, yet an hour a day or whatever she divided that up. Then she'd work on another project for that 10 hours, and then she'd float that first one back in. So yeah. It got again. And I would think that would keep it fresh.
Yeah.
To keep rotating through. Because it's easy when you have huge projects to get burnt out on them. I know when I'm ready to move on to another project, I've got my phone out and I'm going through Instagram instead of stitching.
And it's sitting right there.
It's sitting right there. I'm just, I'm like, oh, I'm obviously need to move to a different project, move to a different room, walk around, do something, you know, because obviously I'm ready to move on.
Yeah.
I'm done with this for tonight.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But, okay. Oh, we got to find that article, because you sent it to me. I read it. And so we both have it somewhere. You know, I hate when that happens. I just hate when that happens.
I know. And I looked and I'm like, I can't find it. Yeah. Where did it go?
It lays it all out very precisely. And it seemed like, because like the whip of the month thing or that whip chart, you know, I couldn't do mm-hmm. that. I can't keep up.
Right. And I even tried it where I thought, okay, I'm going to work on these projects for an hour. And once I've worked on it for an hour, I can say I'm done.
Yeah.
But that didn't even work. I was like, no, that didn't work. And that's why I'm wondering if some sort of, like, I've been working on, it's right here, No Time Like the Present, which is the Modern Folk Embroidery 2024 cell.
Yeah.
And I've been working on it pretty consistently. You can see it there.
Yeah.
So I'm down. If you've seen the project, it has the two swirls and the stag at the bottom. I'm at the bottom, and I'm at the last month. So you can barely look on the wrong side.
I see you're making the cross across the bottom with the border. Yep, mm-hmm.
That's the bottom. So I'm at the bottom.
And you just started that not too long ago.
I started at the beginning of the year. I could tell you the exact date, but it was probably January or February.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it was like a month behind, which was fine. But I'm at the point now, it's like, okay, do I keep working on this? Or do I put it away and work on it?
You finished that sucker now. Look at that. You're there.
I'm there. It is so, so close. It's so close.
You go on a mission now. You go on a mission to finish that.
Yeah. I showed it to my son. And he said he would, I said, okay, for Christmas, I want this made into the clock. So he said, okay. So when he comes home at Christmas, we'll figure out how to mount it and make it into a clock. Cause that's what I want to do. But I wonder why I have been able to keep working on this, because most of the time I get, you know, I get quickly bored.
Yes.
And I have to start a new project.
Yes, but you do.
But I wonder, there's two things going for this project. It was divided into, I think it was 10 months, not 12, because I think this ends in October. Jacob divided it that way, Modern Folk Embroidery. And so that made it easier. It wasn't so hard to keep up. If you did 1 month, you could say, okay, I'm going to put it away, because I finished this month's work.
Yeah.
And then Jennifer. Jennifer's, when we met, I think she said this when we were at Sassy Jack's, right? She said something about being tired of having all those you know, having a bunch of projects that she was working on and nothing getting done and feeling very frustrated about it. And I felt the same way. I knew what she was saying. Once she said it, I was like, yeah, I kind of feel the same way.
Yeah.
And so she said she was going to just work on one project, one cross stitch project till she was done. And then she had, I don't know, like a knitting project or tamari ball. And she was going to work on that one till it was done. And then her slow stitching. And I thought, that's a great way to go. So I divided it just to two. I did this modern folk embroidery and then the dawn to dusk, which I haven't touched because I've been on a tear with the no time like the present. But that too is close to being done. I just went, I just looked at it before we started talking. I thought, I have two motifs that are totally not started and two that are started that are close to being done. And then it's basically the border.
Yeah. And so that'll be two. You're likely by the end of the year to have finished two huge projects. Huge.
Right. Huge projects.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And so it makes me think, because we were, I had my embroidery guild last night and they were laughing at me as usual because I did start another project. It was the, we're doing the group correspondence class with Gail Stafford, the Bargello one. And I wanted to start it because I wasn't sure who was going to show up. And there was some discussion about choosing colors. And I thought, okay, I'm going to start mine. And that way people can see what I'm doing for colors. But then they laughed. They said, well, don't you have that huge cabinet of curiosities to do, Beth?
Oh, had to bring that up. Had to bring that like, up.
I was like, okay. So that is actually divided into months. It was sent out as a monthly lesson. And I think someone asked Trish how she got that done, that it seemed a lot of stitching for the month. Well, one thing she admits, she's a fast stitcher. But she said she did other things while she did it. So what she had in the month was what she did that month. And I thought, well, maybe I should move into doing that. Maybe allowing myself 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
But starting that up as a monthly.
Right. To get started on it.
Yeah. To get started on it. And because once I start on it, because you've got all those fun threads and different stitches. It's not just making little X's. It's, you know, you're doing some shading, you're doing fun stuff with threads, needle weaving, stump work.
Yeah. That's an interesting one. And we're trying to put together a special show about caskets, which reminds me, I got to push on that a little bit. But it's interesting to me. Because I remember the night, I'll always remember the night that you got the package and we did the show and all the threads and all the things came out of that box. And we went on for a long time looking at all that stuff and how cool it was. But I wonder, and it's not just you, because I've done it too, if some of these projects get delayed because we say, all right, I'm going to do a casket, but I want to create my own design. Because you wanted to do things that related to you and your kids. If the minute we start that, we put up such a huge roadblock that prevents it from going.
I think so. And that's why I stopped on that. Because I admit, I'm not a good drawer. I'm not good at sketching. Yeah. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? Well, so I'm not going to do anything. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So when I started stitching, I thought, I'm just going to stitch it the way she has it designed and go for it. But once I started, I realized I didn't have to change the whole thing. I really am going to change the cartouches because I think that would be an easy change to do the four gospels, the four creatures. And even if I did them very simply, do a simple cartoon. But you're right. I think once you start saying, I'm going to change something, especially if it's something such a huge project.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just changing a few colors. That'd be easy. I am changing the whole, I was thinking about changing the whole design. And I thought, no, I'm going to do it as she's designed it so I know how to use the threads.
Yeah.
And then I can do another one.
Yeah.
Right. Get one done and work on another one.
Because
I think that's what people do.
There's a huge difference from taking your standard cross-stitch house, tree, cat, and car and saying, all right, I'm going to make it a blue house this time instead of a red one. Yeah, so what? You know? Yeah.
Right.
No,
right.
This is literally creating your own design within the design that was put together as part of the kit. And then, okay, now wait a minute. That's going to take me some time. So then the whole thing gets put on hold. But then you could have done, you know, I'm not saying how you should do it, but maybe other parts to kind of get into it. You know, and I don't know. Or parts around
And that's it. I think that's when I started working on it and started to work on the tiny little frieze up top. I think it's the first little thing you do. And it's small and it's like, oh, I can do this. This is fun. And it went fast. And I was like, oh yeah. But then I know the next lesson, the next big lesson is making, there's a stag. And I don't like the stag. I've never liked those little animals. And so that's, and this was us. Yeah, that didn't, it was like, okay, so that's why I'm thinking I need to change the cartouche. I think I could do all the stitching around the cartouche and then get confident to add it and change it. Because other people have done it. It's not impossible. And I know the little girls did it. And I know that I've got lots of information on how to do it, on how to do the stitching. I just need to do it. Okay. It's like, okay, let's talk slate frames.
There.
I was bound and determined before we met again to get my slate frame loaded up. Have I done it?
No,
because I've got to go find the Jen Aiden Christie slate frame video. I got to get my materials all together. It's not the same as for us anymore as loading up a stretcher bar. You know, if I said I want to go start a canvas project, we don't think about it. We go do that. But you talk to someone who's new to canvas work and say, okay, it's time to set up your canvas. They're like, panic city.
Right. Right.
Well, what do you mean I got to put it on stretcher bars? How do I do that? Well, you just, because we've done it so often. I think it's the same thing with the slate frame. I think it's the same thing with this stump work piece. It's all new. It's all new. So it's you got to get over that fear factor.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're exactly right, because I'm in the same boat. They're sitting right across from me. Two slate frames. I know exactly what's going on them. I just got to sit down. But you know what I've done is I've complicated it, because okay, I have these slate frames, and then I got in my head I was going to go buy some good wood, and I was going to build
a trestle. The trestle frame.
Yeah. So I was going to build a trestle. So, all right, I'll put the slate frames aside. I'm going to build the trestle, then I'll do the slate frames. Have I done anything with the trestle? No. So that mentally is sitting in the way of doing the slate frames, which is stupid, because you don't need the trestle to use the slate frame. That's just stupid. But I've put these layers of roadblocks in the way to getting to the thing that really matters. And yeah, we do it. I think we do it too often, and we're our own enemy for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And again, doing something new, like, you know, I know making a trestle frame is not probably difficult, but it's like, okay, you got to take the time. You got to get your plans. You got to take the time.
Yep.
You got to stop whatever else you're doing and work on it. And it's just time. It's time consuming.
Meanwhile, somebody who uses slate frames all the time has already finished three projects. Yeah. Yeah. It's done. Yeah. We do that. But we do that to ourselves a lot.
We do it.
We really do.
Mm-hmm.
A project that you did finish, the lizard painted canvas. Oh, tell about that, because bravo, applause, congratulations, fantastic. Yes. So
yeah.
Tell about I haven't gotten
it back yet, and I'm just fingers crossed. That we had some issues when I sent it off from this post office. She wasn't sure exactly. And I'm like, oh, I hope that is not in an endless do loop going to Kansas City back again, but we'll see. I contacted Cindy Baldwin and I said, hey, would you see if my lizard campus is on the exhibit? Because
okay. All right, start from the beginning. So we saw you work on the lizard canvas for a long time.
And then you sent it
to ANG, the national seminar for judging.
Right. And I asked them to do a judging. So I didn't want it to be non-judged. And I did ask if I could get comments. So you had to pay extra for that, but that was worth it to me because I wanted to know how I could improve.
Yeah.
Officially. So I mailed it off, and of course, stupid me didn't say, please confirm that you received it. So I wasn't even sure it arrived, which of course makes you nervous. So Cindy went and checked, and we got a text back saying, Beth got an honorable mention on her. And I was thrilled. I didn't expect to get anything because I knew my mistakes in that piece. You know, I could see them vividly every time I looked at it. But wow, what a thrill. You know, and I didn't want to say, I was very close. Life has been very stressful with my mother-in-law not being in good health. It's been a lot of stress. And I thought, I don't need to take the time to send this. This is a lot of time. Why am I messing with this?
Yeah.
But I did, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend it.
When Beth gets that back on an upcoming live show, then we'll put it up, and she'll have the judges' comments, because you asked for that. So we'll have the judges' comments, and then we'll go through it and take a look at it. But so when you got that text, because Cindy just sent it to all of us, when you got that text, what you must have been elated.
I was, and I was with family, I think, at the time, and no one else would care. But I think
Little fist pump.
I did. I think I told Rachel is who I told. I was like, Rachel, guess what? She goes, oh, yay. No one else would have cared. You know, Max might have when I get it back and he sees the ribbon.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's like, yeah, you do a lot of those. So what? You know, but I've never entered anything. I've never entered anything at a local fair or at a national level.
So your first entry was to the ANG National Seminar. First entry ever of all the stuff you've done, and you get honorable mention.
Yes, I think it was an honorable mention. Yeah, so I was pretty excited.
That is so cool.
And then I've looked back and I thought, how many painted canvases have I done? And I've done I maybe have done one or two. But most of the time I do charted work of some sort. It's like might have a line drawing on it, and then I follow the directions and I stitch it, you know. So that was exciting too. And I've been thinking about that piece a lot. If I could redo it, how would I redo it? Mm-hmm. And I think taking the Goldwork classes.
Oh.
Well, we get it back. I wonder, like the gecko, I never was really totally satisfied with him. I wasn't happy with the horny toad's frill.
Yeah.
It needed work. But the gecko too was a little, I wasn't thrilled. And I wonder if I had done him in some sort of gold work. But at the time I don't do gold work, Beth.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that was a brick wall at one time. Yeah, it's not just shambles on the ground. Yeah.
Yes, but think about it. Think about all the things you can do with gold work. Yep. And you sent me that bird canvas, and now I'm thinking, okay, I've got to find stretcher bars for that and frame it up and look at it, because I think that's the first step. I sat and looked at that lizard canvas for a long time before I stitched it. And I've got to admit, I liked doing it on my own. Rather than getting a stitch guide.
Because that's so true, because that was an active piece in your rotation for a long time before you even put a stitch in it, but it was getting active thought.
I mean, I knew
about it a lot. Yeah.
Right. Because I knew what I was going to do with the snake. The snake was easy. That's why I bought the canvas. I thought, oh, I know what I'm going to do with that snake. I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of the canvas, but I love that snake. I know what I'm going to stitch on him. So it would run through my mind when I would think of it. And so when I finally got it up and started stitching and pulled threads, that was easy. But then I had to do the rest of the piece, and that's what helped me up. And then, again, I just read an article about if you're going to do something that's complicated, it's better to do, what is that? There's like a saying that goes with it. You better to do, to look at it and do some pre-planning than just start, which is tends to be the way I work. we'll just start, you know, what could go wrong? but I think that's the thing with that bird canvas. I'm going to take it out. I know I have some ideas for certain parts of it. And I need to take notes, and then I need to fill out what I'm going to do with the rest of it before I start stitching.
I think, but that was even in the lizard canvas, there was attempts and tear outs, and then you painted the canvas at one point after you had stitching in, which was incredibly gutsy. But
do it all the time.
Sure you do. But there was a lot, that was quite a process all the way through of changing your mind, trying, this isn't working.
Right. And I think that's part of it. I think that's the idea, is you've got to be willing to rip out. And that's always, I still run into when I say, oh, I've got to rip this out, it's not working. People are like, oh no, just leave it. Why are you're taking out all your work? And I'm like, but this isn't working, and I need to take it out. You know, it needs to come out. I'll be happier in the long run.
If you don't like it now, you'll never like it. So get it out of there.
Get it out. Get it out. And so I think the process was fun of learning what worked. And even getting to the point where I was like, okay, I've got to stop playing with this and just let it be done, because it wasn't moving forward. I was just ripping and being frustrated. And so, but I think that's the other thing I took out of it, is I think I would work it differently now that I've taken more classes, and learned more techniques. I think even after, if I work on this Cabinet of Curiosities piece, that will give me more techniques for working other projects. And I think we always want to be learning. I think that's that's what we like about needlework, is it's, you know, I like doing cross stitch. I find it very relaxing. But I'm ready to learn something new. I'm ready to push the boundaries a little bit too. So
But see, therein is a little thing too. You've learned so much since you did the lizard canvas, and so you would do it differently. But obviously, it got recognition, so there's nothing wrong. Well, there may be flaws, but there's in the big picture, nothing wrong with what you did. You in your mind would do things differently. But if you keep waiting, you never do it. If you just jump in and you finish that one and say, all right, now what I learned from that and what I've learned hence, now I'm going to apply to the birds. And then you move forward, but you're moving forward instead of being stuck on this blank lizard canvas that is just getting old.
And all the other projects we have that, you know, we're waiting on, that we're waiting. Oh, I want to be better. I want to be perfect at white work before I do any of my white work projects. Well,
no,
it's never going to happen. You might as well just start working on them, practice your tension, practice your stitching, get better at it, and then you can maybe apply it in different ways.
You're never going to get better at white work just thinking about it. You actually have to move a thread through the linen.
It's not going to be, and it's not going to be perfect the first time. It's not. I can see an improvement on my white work from the time I started with the Gay Ann Rogers piece. To what I can do now.
But you actually got to do it.
But you got to do it. You got to take it out and cut and do all the work.
No, see, and that happened to me, Karen Kluba's Spring Hill. Remember when we started that? And I actually have notes, all the different things I was going to do to enhance that basic cross-stitch piece, big, complex, but basic cross-stitch piece. I got myself so burdened with all the special things I was going to do that I didn't do any of it. And now it's rolled up somewhere.
Yeah.
I made it, I just piled so much on it that I didn't do any of it.
Right.
Moved on. Then it was squirrel. Yeah. Move on. Yeah.
Right. And then that's, I think there's, so like I said, I was going to, before I started my next painted canvas, I will take time to take some notes and try to figure out what I'm going to do on the piece. But at some point, I'm going to have to put needle to thread and needle to canvas, and I'm just going to have to start. And if it's not right, it comes out. That's okay. But it's, you got to start. You got to start somewhere.
Yep. Yeah. The key. You always got to start somewhere.
Got to start. Start.
Yep. All right. We're calling it right there.
Okay.
Sunday, Ana Luisa Catalano. Don't miss it. Really amazing progress and talent in less than 4 years, like from scratch to wow in 4 years. Really wow. Like really wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, and a cool story behind it. So that is Sunday. Next week we'll have a live show, and we have someone who has had good success at the 2024 State Fair, and I can't remember her name, but anyway, we're going to have some more State Fair winning projects to look at. So that'll be cool.
Perfect.
Yep. Thanks for listening.
All right. Bye.
Bye.